One is the kavana that Kriya Shema shares in common with all other mitzvos, which is the kavana to be yotze. And we discussed that everyone would agree that l'chachila, the outset, wants to take a moment before reciting Shema to have in mind to fulfill the positive commandment of Kriya Shema, shel shacharis in the morning and shel arvis in the afternoon. And we also mentioned the chayyadam, that b'di'eved, that if one does not have that focus, as long as one is doing it in the context of davening, and then in some other context, the one would be yotze. But the second kavana, which you don't automatically have, so that is also crucial. And that's the kavana, just to quote the language of the Mishnah Berurah, Sifkat Nir Aleph, which is in that second sif of the Mechaber. We spoke about last week how there are two sifim in the Mechaber, each of which speaks about a different kavana. That this is not the kavana mentioned earlier, but rather this is kavana zohu lisbonein velosam alibo mashu omer. It's to contemplate and to place in one's heart or one's concentration that which one is saying. And that's why it is ma'akev, it's absolutely crucial. Rakva Pasuk Rishon, only in the first Pasuk, and if I'm not mistaken, I think there are those who also require the second passage as well, of the Baruch Shem Kavod. So even though the Mishnah Berurah speaks about the idea of understanding the words, but that goes hand in hand with what the message of those words are. When one is contemplating what the words of Shema Yisrael are, which is basically an expression of divine unity, so as a direct consequence of the fact that Hashem is one, meaning that there is only one power in the world that leads to everything else, so directly following that is the concept of Kabbalah Sol Malchus. If there's only one powerful entity, that means everything in the world is dependent on that entity, and as a result of that, that means we have no choice but to submit to that being upon whom we are dependent. The Rambam makes that explicit connection as well between the theme of divine unity, which is the simple meaning of the words of the Shema, and the statement of Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim. Now it's interesting because if we look carefully in the Rambam, in the Sefer Mitzvos, there are really two separate mitzvos that, of course, in the Shema, especially according to the analysis you mentioned last week from Rabbi Soloveitchik, the difference between a Maisa Mitzvah and a Kiyama Mitzvah, comes to be crystallized, and that is as follows. There is a mitzvah of Shema. What is the commandment to recite the Shema? Dibartavo. In the Shema is contained the phrase, and thou shalt speak about it. About what? About divine unity. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, Ahavta Hashem Elokecha. Dibartavo. B'shivtcha v'yisech, v'letcha v'derech, v'shachcha v'kamecha. This is well known, Chazal Darshan, from the double language of v'shachcha v'kamecha. When you lie down, when you get up, that's why we have to read the Shema twice. Dibarta Bam, speak about divine unity twice a day. There's another mitzvah, the mitzvah of believing in divine unity. And that's fulfilled, as the Rambam in the Sefer HaChinuch elaborates, one of the opening Biuri Halacha quotes that Sefer HaChinuch, that there are six mitzvahs that you can fulfill at Tmidios, to fulfill any second of the day, not only can, you're supposed to. You're supposed to be constantly aware of them the whole day. And one of them is divine unity. What is the pasuk that serves as the source of believing in divine unity? That's the pasuk of Shema. It gets a little confusing. The pasuk of Shema is the mitzvah of believing in Hashem Echad. The pasuk of Dibartabam is the mitzvah of speaking about Hashem Echad. So that's what the Rambam explicitly states. Mitzvah Beis is to believe in Hashem, Hamonas HaYichud. And the pasuk that demands of us to believe in divine unity is the pasuk of Shema Yisrael, Shem Akim, Shem Echad, because that's what the pasuk says. Here Moshe Rabbeinu charges us with prophecy from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Hear, O Israel, Hashem is our God, Hashem is one. That's the commandment. You know, hear it, as we'll focus on later when we discuss the words of the Shema themselves. Hear it, accept it, believe it, and understand it to the extent that each according to their own level and in terms of their understanding of what divine unity means exactly. That's a mitzvah of emunah, to believe. Without doing anything, one fulfills that just by realizing and committing, either in the conscious level or the subconscious level, that there's only one all-powerful being upon whom all the other things in the world were created and continue to exist. Then there's a separate mitzvah, which the Rambam lists much later. I forget which mitzvah it is. Maybe the Chav somewhere. This is mitzvah Beis. Not surprisingly. First mitzvah, believe in Hashem. Second mitzvah, believe in divine unity. And a much later mitzvah, the Rambam quotes the mitzvah of talking about divine unity. And that's the mitzvah of Divartabam. These two mitzvahs, of course, interrelated. Just like belief in divine unity is not just a mind statement. Belief, as the Sefer Chinuch takes pains to elaborate on, belief is where someone submits to a concept where one does not entertain the possibility of its reverse or of its opposite. That's belief. Anything else is more of a doubt or an agnosticism. Belief, they point out, the scholars, the etymological scholars, they point out that belief really means to know. That the original, sometimes we distinguish between belief and knowledge, but it's somewhat arbitrary, at least in terms of the English, because believe, whatever, from the old Greek or whatever it is, the old English, actually means to know. So, obviously the mitzvah of Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, means to wholly submit to that concept. So if here, if Hashem Yisbarach then commands us, V'divarta bo, speak about it, speak about Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. So it stands to reason, that's why Rabbi Soloveitchik said that he thinks that this is a truism. There's no other way to say this, even though not all the Rishonim made it explicit, but he thinks it has to be that way. To speak about it. So obviously the speaking about it can't just be a rote recitation. Just saying the words, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. It obviously has to relate to that original commandment. That Hashem asks us to believe in Hashem Echad, and that's a mitzvah that applies constantly. Then twice a day, he asks us to reinforce that with speech. But if it's just a speech without thought, so then it's not reinforcing that concept. I mean, maybe it's a study in Talmud Torah. It's learning something from the Torah, but it's not that's a separate mitzvah of L'imaratem etz b'neichem, v'shinantem l'vanecha. But that wouldn't be the mitzvah speaking about the Shema. A forum in which this becomes readily discernible, where these two mitzvos split from each other, is in the realm of women's obligation in the Shema. Because the Shulchan Aruch writes, based on the Mishnah Masechet Brachos, that women, of course, are exempt from the Shema. It's a mitzvah seishes man grama, unlike tefillah, which either is considered a non-time-bound mitzvah, because on a Torah level it's only once a day, or maybe it's an exception to the rule, but women are obligated to daven, but they don't have to say Shema. Nonetheless, the Rishonim already record that it was a proper practice that was recommended, which has pretty much been universally accepted, that we recommend that women should recite the Shema, and the Ramah adds the first pasuk, or the first two psukim Shema and Baruch Shem Kavod. So if you analyze the commentaries in the Shulchan Aruch, especially Lavush and others, so, what exactly are we recommending to the women? Which mitzvah should they volunteer? So the simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch is they should volunteer the Shema. But that's very odd, because why would we recommend that they should volunteer the Shema any more than they should volunteer Lulav, or they should volunteer Shofar, or they should volunteer Sukkah? Now it is true that throughout the centuries, most women have volunteered these mitzvahs. So debate whether they make a bracha on it or not, you know, not in the Sephardim, but the Shulchan Aruch never records, and it's advisable that a woman should volunteer lulav. It's advisable that she volunteer shofar. They do, but by default, why not get as many women as you can? What's unique about the Shema? So the phraseology of the Shulchan Aruch is Nachon hu l'landam sheikablu aleihem o malchus shemayim. Very interesting phraseology. Doesn't say Nachon hu l'landam sheyikru es Hashma, the way I originally stated. The precise phraseology of the Shulchan Aruch, Nachon hu sheyikablu aleihem o malchus shemayim. So what does it mean? That means that women are obligated in belief in Hashem. That's a non-time-bound mitzvah. That applies, as a matter of fact, every second of our lives. So then the Shulchan Aruch recommends that, listen, on the one hand, on a Torah level, that's the way Rabbi Shechter put it, that Hashem only demands of women that they believe in Hashem Echad. He demands of men that they believe in Hashem Echad, and they go speaking about it all the time. Every morning and every evening, you have to reinforce that. Hashem had more confidence in the Emunah and women that they didn't have to reinforce it all the time. But nonetheless, the Shulchan Aruch is dealing with perhaps a certain reality, that not all women are necessarily going to have that state of constant Emunah b'Hashem unless it is reinforced. So we recommend that they should use the Shema as a vehicle to fulfill that mitzvah which they are obligated in, namely the mitzvah of Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim, or the expression of divine unity. So what you have then, in a certain sense, is in a real sense, is that when men fulfill the mitzvah of Shema, they're really fulfilling two obligatory commandments: the mitzvah to believe in Hashem, which is reinforced by the Shema, and the divine commandment that you must reinforce it by stating it. When women recite the Shema, so they're really just assisting themselves in reinforcing that commandment that they are obligated in, namely belief in Hashem. And that has a very practical ramification. We have to insist that women should recite the Shema on time, so that you get the impression from later poskim that no, the women could recite the Shema anytime they want during the day. Of course, if they're davening on time, so why not do it on time? This way they'll get extra credit for a voluntary mitzvah of Shema as well, of the recital of the Shema. But the main thrust of the recommendation of the Shulchan Aruch about women reciting the Shema is that they too should utilize a verbal expression to reinforce belief in Hashem. It highlights the same concept, that that's the whole purpose of the Shema, to reinforce emunah. The difference between men and women is that whereas men are obligated to reinforce it verbally, women are recommended to reinforce it verbally. But if not for that parallel, if the recital of the Shema would just be a recital of words, then why should we ask the women to say those words if it's not a crucial part of its fulfillment to focus on what those words mean? What I wanted to continue with for the last 5 minutes tonight is just to highlight some broad themes of the notion of Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shamayim. We mentioned briefly, I actually glossed over this before, the Rambam in recording the mitzvah of Amunah, so he speaks of Amunah in the unity of Hashem, so he notes that the Chachamim call this Malchus Shamayim, Kedei L'Kabbalah Malchus Shamayim. And we noted very quickly that how are those two related? Because once you accept only one power, that means it's only to that power that you owe all your allegiance. Otherwise you'd have split allegiance. It couldn't be a real Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shamayim if you have to share that allegiance with other powers. So the Mishnah in Brachos records from Rabbi Yeshua, I think we mentioned this last week as well, that the three parashos of Shema represent Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shamayim, which is the first parasha, especially highlighted by the first pasuk. The second parasha represents Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos, especially highlighted by the first series of Sukkim, B'hoyim Shemot Hashem Mitzvosai. And the third parasha represents one mitzvah, the mitzvah of Tzitzis, or the mitzvah of Zechiras Yitzhak Yisraim as well. Our main focus is, of course, the first pasuk, but in order to appreciate the concept of Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shamayim, I think it's important to also understand how it relates to the other two themes. An analogy to conversion, I think, would be very instructive. We know that sometimes we think about conversion as something that, a process that's done in order to convert a non-Jew to Judaism, but it has nothing to do with Jews. But when we think about the whole Har Sinai experience, and of course Chazal make it explicit that the whole conversion process is learned out from Har Sinai, we realize that a convert is just retracing our steps that we took at Har Sinai in order to become committed to Torah. So we know, of course, that one of the famous slogans of Har Sinai was Anasa V'Nishma. Anasa V'Nishma, as is well known, was the whole commitment to submit to the divine will and all of his commandments. In short, Anasa V'Nishma was a short form of the Shema, a short form of the first two parashios of Shema. Yes, whatever you say, we are going to listen to. The Mechilta makes it a little more explicit in terms of the interrelationship between those two by stating that, in a famous analogy, that if a very charismatic leader who, let's say, was out of a job, let's say he retired from becoming the leader of a certain country, so he went to some Caribbean island, they said, oh, we heard about you. You're Franklin Delano Roosevelt. You did good things. So you built a new deal for America. Can you be our leader too? So he says, I'll be happy to do that, and I'll be happy to legislate for you, but first you have to elect me. Because if you don't elect me as your leader, so what does it help? I'm going to write pieces of paper, do this, you're not going to listen to me. So too, the Mechilta notes that that's why Hashem Yisbarach first said, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Otzisicha Meretz Yisrael. Any questions? Any doubts? Yeah, I'm the same one who overturned all the rules of nature, and I took you out of Mitzrayim. You all witnessed that. So you submit to Anochi Hashem Elokecha. In other words, Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shamayim. You admit to the fact that I have a right to now legislate. So Klal Yisrael, yeah, Nasa Nishma. So now we're ready to assign mitzvah. So Yilacha, Lamacherim, and so on and so forth. So what we have then is that we did that as a nation at Har Sinai to submit to the notion of Hashem's divinity, his all-powerfulness, his omnipotence, the fact that he's the only power in the world, the fact that he has a right to legislate, and then in the second parasha we accept his legislation, the package deal, Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos. And so that's what we did at Har Sinai, and then the Torah demands of us that we do that every single day. So we relive Har Sinai every single day. Perhaps we can suggest, I think certain Sforan point this out, if not, perhaps we can suggest, but I think it was said by others as well, that that's also an interrelationship between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah is a day where the whole day is Shema. The whole day is Kabbalah Samuch HaShemayim. And Yom Kippur is focusing on all the things that we did wrong, so we have to correct. So perhaps we can suggest that the relationship between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is a whole day that's devoted to Rosh Hashanah, the Kabbalah Samuch HaShemayim, and a day to a recommitment to Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs. More about that analogy later in subsequent weeks, and we comment briefly on the third parsha. Just wanted to end briefly with an analogy of the Beis Halevi, which also might help focus the energies on the notion of Kabbalah Sol Malchus and what it means as opposed to just doing mitzvahs. The Beis Halevi asks a halakha question on Har Sinai. How is the transaction binding? Because the Gemara has I told this to my students, but they're all, I don't know, they were in diapers when the first Iraq war happened. So they never heard of this. There used to be a game show called Let's Make a Deal. So in Let's Make a Deal, so you all know what this is. So Let's Make a Deal, so you buy a black box, right? You buy the contents of under this box, under that box, so you'd be willing to give away all your prize money for this box. So sometimes you'll get $1 million, a vacation to Acapulco, and sometimes you'll get two nutshells or something. So the Gemara makes it explicit that that transaction is not binding. I don't have to start up with the game show, but that transaction is not binding because there's no smichas das, there's no gemar das. I buy things, it has to be open, has to be revealed, has to be in packaging that I could see what it is. But if I just buy a black box, even though I put down the money. But we assume that deep down in the recesses of the mind of the buyer, so he really didn't have in mind to buy it, so therefore it's not binding at all. And either party of the transaction could reverse the sale if they so choose. So the Beis Halevi says that's exactly what they did at Har Sinai. They bought into a black box. They didn't know what was coming. Nasim and Ishma, all the other nations asked for a taste, and then they didn't want to take it. Klal Yisrael say, by contrast to the other nation, Nasim and Ishma, whatever you say goes. So the Beis Halevi assumes the way many assume, and especially in Sifri Chassidus they assume this, that Hashem always does things based on His Torah. That's why the Midrashim ask, how come Hashem could cause it to rain on Shabbos, isn't that Chil Shabbos, and so on and so forth. They quote a famous story from Levi Yitzchak Berditchev that he used to get up on Rosh Hashanah and he told the Kodesh Baruch Hu that you cannot write any Gzeiros Ros for Klal Yisrael because it's Yom Tov, so you can't write. But if it's to write Gzeiros Tovos, then you could, because that's Bikuch Nefesh. So that was always the assumption that many Gedol Yisrael made based on those Midrashim that Hashem keeps His Torah. So if Hashem keeps His Torah, that means that Har Sinai had to be a binding transaction. So the Beis Halevi gives a beautiful, insightful analogy. Of course, he doesn't need my editorial, but it helps highlight what Kabbalah Samuch HaShemayim is. Let's say I go to the market and I buy a servant, I buy a slave. So I didn't tell him what I was going to do with him. I just buy him. And even if I do tell him, it doesn't matter. I'm buying him. So then he comes to my house and I say, do my taxes. He says, taxes? I'm not an accountant. I want to clean windows. He says, tough. I bought you, do whatever. Here, read J.K. Lasseter and you do my taxes. I want you to polish my diamonds. You didn't hire me to polish diamonds. So what do you mean? I bought you to do whatever you want. Here, train and you'll polish the diamonds. So you have to do the windows, you have to do the dishes, you have to do everything. So that's what the Beis Halevi says. That's what Nasim Nishma was. Ana Avda the Kutcha Brichu. We're committed to be Avad and Zakar Shbarachu. And now, once he has purchased us, once he has acquired all of us, so now we have to do whatever he says. So that's how it was a binding transaction. So it's that kind of mental attitude that we're supposed to have in mind when we recite the Shema. We accept Hashem's divine unity, and then Kabbalah Sol Malchus, and then followed by Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos, that we're committed to the whole package deal of Torah and Mitzvos. And it's in that kind of structure of what Rabbi Kirzner once called urgency, that the Mitzvos are not just, we choose to do this Mitzvah, choose that Mitzvah. We are signing on a dotted line. Anachnu Avadim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And based on that idea, it also helps understand why there's no bracha on the Shema. A beautiful avodrum where he writes as follows, that not only are we makabel amuch shemayim in the mitzvah of Shema, but we do that every time we do a mitzvah. Because you can't just do a mitzvah out of realm of obligation. You have to put yourself in a framework of once again signing on the dotted line, I'm fully committed to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And how do you do that? You make a bracha. Baruch Atah Hashem, Lekeinu Melech HaOlam, you're the boss. Kabbalah Asol Malach Shemayim. Asher Kedishan Mitzvosav, Kabbalah Asol Mitzvos. Then you do the mitzvah. So many of the Rishonim ask, and the Avadram asks it as well, I think he quotes from Rabbeinu Yonah, if I'm not mistaken. Why is there no bracha on the Shema? Asher Kedishan Mitzvosav, Yitzvon HaLikru Asa Shema. He says, they don't need to be there to be a bracha. What's the whole purpose of a bracha? To be Mekabal Amach Shemayim. Well, that's what the Shema is. So I have to be Mekabal Amach Shemayim and all mitzvos in order to be Mekabal Amach Shemayim and all mitzvos. That's the essence of the Shema. Red button?